In black and white, a broadcast tower atop a planet emits signals. An RKO radio picture. RKO Pictures Incorporated presents Boris Karloff. In Bedlam. And Anna Lee as Nell Bowen. With Billy House as Lord Mortimer, Richard Fraser as the Stonemason, Glenn Vernon as the Gilded Boy, Ian Wolfe as Sidney Long, Jason Robards as Oliver Todd, Leland Hodgson as That Devil Wilkes, Joan Newton as Dorothea the Dove, and Elizabeth Russell as Mistress Sims. Executive producer Jack J. Gross. Suggested by the William Hogarth painting Bedlam, Plate 8, The Rake's Progress. Screenplay by Carlos Keith and Mark Robeson. Produced by Val Luton. Directed by Mark Robeson. London, 1761. The people of the 18th century called their period the Age of Reason. A large stone building with sloping roofs stands beneath cloudy skies. A dark-haired man hanging by his fingertips struggles as he tries to pull himself onto a flat roof. A man wearing a tricorn hat and holding a lantern appears on the roof and peers at the man. Spotting him, the dark-haired man lowers himself. The man with the lantern steps on the man's hand. The first man dangles by one hand. The man with the lantern steps down on the man's other hand. The man falls. The man with the lantern leaves. Men wearing tricorn hats and women in bonnets and long dresses hurry across a grassy area. On a sign, St. Mary's of Bethlehem Asylum. Inside a horse-drawn carriage, a dark-haired woman holds a white parrot.
Come, Paul. Do you know my friend, Lord Mortimer?
A smiling white-haired man.
Lord Mortimer.
Huh?
Lord Mortimer.
Lord Mortimer's like a pig. Brain small, his belly big.
The woman wearing a sheer veil and a large necklace and the man in a tricorn hat and ruffled neckerchief laugh. People rush into or crowd the outside of a building. The carriage stops. The driver climbs down, then steps to the carriage's window.
What's this hubbub?
It's one of the lunatics from the asylum, I expect, my lord.
A prank, a jest?
Go and see, John.
The driver bows slightly, then walks off.
Bedlam? It does not look so merry a place, my lord.
Never been there? You'll have to pay Master Sims tuppence to see all the loonies in their cages. Maybe they'll teach you some new tricks now.
I have no need of their wit to entertain you, my lord.
The driver returns.
They say, sir, that one of the poor devils in there fell from the roof, trying to escape.
Very regrettable. Well, drive on.
Your lordship, it seems to me the man was known to you.
Eh?
I thought I saw him in your company not a week gone by, sir.
Eh, really? Well, let's have a look.
Opening the door, the driver unfolds a step. Lord Mortimer, the man inside the carriage, steps down. The carriage rocks. Lord Mortimer follows the driver through a small crowd. As Lord Mortimer peers downward, the driver turns to a man holding a torch.
You there. You are the light.
With the torch nearby, Lord Mortimer's eyebrows rise.
It is. It is young Master Colby.
He fell trying to escape. Some of our boobs haven't sense enough to keep safe behind their bars.
Where's Sims? Fetch him.
He is dining out, my lord.
Dining out with Colby's blood on his hands. Do you know me?
Yes, my lord.
Then tell Master Sims to wait upon me in the morning. I have some few words I wish to say to him.
Lord Mortimer and his driver leave. Daytime. In a spacious room, a man with dark, slick-back hair sits against one wall. Grasping a walking stick, the man turns toward a closed door. Servants bearing trays file in, then step past the man. A boy dressed similarly to the servants follows. The man holds out his walking stick. The boy stops.
Will you remind Lord Mortimer that I am waiting?
As the man lowers his stick, the boy steps through the doorway, then shuts the door. In the other room, Lord Mortimer sits up in a large canopy bed. Nell, the dark-haired woman, sits nearby. The boy hands Lord Mortimer a mirror. Lord Mortimer checks his face, then smiling, hands the mirror back to the boy.
Well, Pompey, are you a pretty boy this morning?
The boy grimaces as he peers at his reflection.
What are you trying to do, Pompey?
Lord, I want to look like the visitor in the hallway.
Sims! I'd forgotten Sims! You there, clear out!
Send in the good Sims. First course for my lord's rage, to be eaten with a source of lightning and to the tune of thunder. Send him in. Send him in.
Sims! Sims!
Sims steps into Lord Mortimer's bedchamber. One servant shuts the door, and then he and another servant press their ears to it. They stand erect as the door opens and the boy steps out. Looking from one servant to the other, the boy shuts the door. The servants walk off.
That you hated him, I knew. That you envied him was known to all. But that you would dare to leave that murderous window open to murder him from spite and envy.
Murder, my lord? There was no murder. Colby was my guest. He chose to leave by a window before I could open the door for him. And then that monstrous accident.
Accident? Master Sims is writing a new dictionary. Are accidents contrived, plotted, executed?
Exactly, Mistress Bowen. This was a misadventure contrived by the victim and executed by nature's law that all who lose their grip on gutters must fall.
You stick to that story, Master Sims?
I could never invent one half so droll. The characters of the tale, two poets, Colby and myself. But I am not only a poet, but also, by your lordship's favor, the apothecary general of St. Mary's of Bethlehem Hospital. My friend comes to discuss poetry. I am absent. My guards mistake him for a madman. He tries to escape from them and is killed. Like a romance, my lord.
It's a romance that cost me 20 guineas and a night of laughter.
How so, my lord?
Lord Mortimer was foolish enough to pay in advance for poetry promised in the future. Colby was to write a mask for the fate Lord Mortimer is giving.
If I might offer my humble talents. Even at the hospital I deal in wit and laughter, madam. Are there any who have come to Bedlam and say the entertainment is not worth the tuppence they paid?
You do not entertain me, Master Sims.
That is because you have a tender heart. Most people laugh at my ugliness.
It offends me, sir.
To move a lady so beautiful in any way.
Sims bows.
He's gallant, too.
I am as you wish, my lord. And I will make your fate a frolic you will remember.
How?
Sometimes the success of a play belongs to the players. What if the mask were performed by my company of wits, the Bedlamites?
Have your loonies perform? The opposition. Not John Wilkes himself nor his whole Whig party could think of anything as clever as that, eh, Nell?
You didn't think of it either.
Well, it's one the same thing. My friend here thought of it.
Let us say that you inspired the thought, my lord.
Do you hear that, Nell? I inspired him.
Let us say that you both inspired me. And my lord and the beloved of my lord.
I think you misunderstand, Master Sims. I am my lord's protege. I entertain him, and he has no more freedom with me than any other man.
In any case, if my lord will but give me the day and hour of the fate, I will prepare a mask of madness that will set you howling.
1 week from today at the Vauxhall. The company assembles at 8.
Thank you. By your leave.
Lord Mortimer holds out his hand, palm up. Sims bows, then turns and leaves, bowing slightly to Nell on his way out.
A merry notion.
The Lord Mayor will roll in the soup with laughter.
Capital fellow, this Sims. A capital fellow.
You ask me, my lord, he's a stench in the nostrils, a sewer of ugliness, and a gutter brimming with slop.
But witty.
So he tells us.
Even if his wit is wanting, his bedlamites will set my guests roaring. Everyone who goes to Bedlam expires with laughter. Why don't you go and see them, Nell? You'll see how funny they are.
Perhaps I will.
Men and women stroll past a building with a wrought iron fence as two flower sellers walk by. A horse pulls a small covered wagon. Several people hang out the back of the wagon. Sims, wearing a black tricorn hat, strides past a man peering at the wagon. He stops at a doorway where a scrub woman scours a set of steps. Peering up at Sims, the woman grabs a rag, then wipes off the bottom step. Sims climbs the steps, then walks into the building. He walks into a room where a dark-haired man writes with a quill pen. The man bows.
Good morning, Master Sims. There is a Quaker waiting for you, sir. A master stonemason. Will you have him in?
Sitting at a desk, Sims removes his wig, revealing short white hair.
Hodge, where is my rhyming lexicon? I need a rhyme for Mortimer.
That Quaker, sir.
Whatever you rattling on about so, Podge. I have an important commission, a rhyme comedy for my Lord Mortimer. You bother me about some snivelling Quaker.
He's been waiting so long, sir.
Waiting?
3 hours, sir.
Huh. I waited 4 hours before my Lord Mortimer would give me a dog's word. Let him wait some more.
But he will not wait, sir. He's a good workman. And cheap, I'm told.
Cheap? Let him in.
Sims' assistant bows slightly, then steps into a hallway where a man wearing a dark brimmed hat and white neckerchief sits. The assistant gestures, and the man follows him into the room. The dark-haired stonemason stares at Sims as Sims peruses a thick book. Sims closes the book, then peers at his assistant.
You may leave us, Podge. My man tells me you'll do the work cheaply.
With cut stone, 1 foot thick, and the best mortar, I can do the work 15 guineas.
What if I were to give you 18 guineas?
It would be too much.
18 guineas, and you are to return to me 2. Then you'll have a better price, and I'll have some reason to employ you.
My friend, I have forgotten what thee has said. If thee do not repeat it, then I can believe no evil of thee.
What kind of cant is this?
Sims stands.
I've asked you for a bribe, man. Have you never been asked before? This is simple business between us two.
My friend, about the stonemasonry?
Nell walks in. Sims quickly dons his wig, smooths it, then smiles at her.
I had not looked forward to the pleasure of seeing you again so soon, Mistress Bowen.
I have a curiosity to see the loonies in their cages.
And so you shall. So you shall.
Sims opens the door, then follows Nell into the hallway. A nearby guard comes to attention.
Your riding crop, Mistress Bird, you must hang it here. It's a law of the Institute. No weapons.
In heaven's name, why?
In one of his plays, a Decker, a second-rate dramatist of the last century, wrote of those in there. Fierce as wild bulls, untamable as flies, and these have off from strangers' sides, snatched rapiers suddenly, and done much harm.
Strangely, here one forgets you're a man of letters, Master.
She hands him her riding crop.
Our hospital is ancient and well-known, much written of. I dare say no man or woman comes to London from the country who does not pay his tuppence.
Nell fishes a coin from a small purse, then lays it in Sim's outstretched hand. He bows. They walk toward a large wooden door at the end of the passage. A guard opens the door. Inside, Nell stops and stares. Sims peers at her. In a large room, inmates sit on a straw-strewn floor. One man stands facing a stone wall. A man wearing a cone-shaped hat holds a small wooden post while a man next to him, his head covered by a newspaper, plays a violin. Nell and Sims step forward past tall windows towards several people tending to a shirtless man. A young, dark-haired man stares straight ahead as he opens and closes his arms, a long strand of fabric strung between his hands.
Are they not witty, Mistress Bowen? Look at the frolic this one treats himself to. All day long, weaving nets to catch peacocks for the royal dinner.
They're all so lonely. They're all in themselves and by themselves. They pay no heed to us.
You notice that? They have their world and we have ours.
Like separate dreams.
Ours is a human world. Theirs is a bestial world, without reason, without soul. They're animals.
Nell peers at Sims, who smiles. They walk on.
Some are dogs. These I beat.
A cowering inmate scurries off as Sims raises his arm.
Some are pigs. Those I let wallow in their own filth. Some are tigers. These I cage.
Nell peers at a man in a cage as they step up to a young woman standing against a wall.
Some, like this one, are doves.
I've seen enough.
But you haven't seen the other cages.
I've seen enough.
Nell and Sims walk off. The young woman stares straight ahead. Nell strides down the hallway. Following her, Sims picks up her riding crop from a rack, then hands it to her.
But you have no idea how merry they can be. How much amusement they afford.
Amusement? From that mad girl with her staring eyes?
She whips Sims, who holds his face.
I have offended you, Mistress Bowen.
Nell turns, then storms out. The stonemason follows. Sims strokes his own face as he peers after her. Outside, a servant bends to help Nell onto her horse, but the animal backs away. Stepping outside, the stonemason hurries over and grabs the horse's reins. He turns the horse toward Nell.
Thank you, sir. My valet can plait a tress or twirl a furbelow quicker than a handy woman. but he has no knack with horses.
I was glad to do thee this little service. I saw thee strike Sims. Thee shouldn't have done that.
Do you think I'm afraid of him? Do you think he could harm me?
Thee are able enough. It is those poor ones in there I'm thinking of. Sims will make them suffer for that blow.
Are we lovers, that you thee and thou me? I've never seen your face before.
He's a Quaker, Mistress Bowen.
My name is William Hanney. I'm one of the Society of Friends.
I've heard of them. They turn the other cheek.
There is more to being a Quaker than turning the other cheek and saying thee and thou. It is feeling pity for those in there, as thee did.
Do you think I struck him because I felt pity for the loonies?
I saw it in thy face.
Pity? I had no such feeling, sir. I struck the man because I wanted to. Because he is an ugly thing in a pretty world.
There are many ugly things in this pretty world, if thee would but see them.
Master Quaker, I did not always wear velvet.
I had guessed that. But where there is one like thee, to wrest comfort from a hard world with wit and cleverness, there are 10,000 who cannot.
I have no pity for them. Let them do as I did.
But those in there, can they help themselves?
And I have no pity for them either. Animals without souls.
That is not thy thought.
Is it not? Come a week hence to Vauxhall in the evening, and you will see me laughing at these same loonies that you think I pity.
Thee will not laugh at the poor and the afflicted. Not thee. I've seen great ladies, and their hearts were like stone. But thee...
My heart is a flint, sir. It may strike sparks, but they're not warm enough to burn. I have no time to make a show of loving kindness before my fellow men. Not in this life. I've too much laughing to do.
Slapping her horse, Nell rides off. Varney, her valet, follows. In a garden, musicians play as well-dressed people sit at a candlelit table holding goblets and bottles. Standing nearby, Sims addresses the people.
Flanked by lunacy and speaking with the voice of youth, our golden age of reason will tell you of its brightest adornment, Lord Mortimer.
Sims bows. Lord Mortimer smiles. On a small stage, a robed boy holding a scepter and painted to resemble a statue opens his eyes and mouth. Sims steps up to the boy.
Come, Reason, you've wit enough to say a word or two.
What say you to this, Wilkes? A mad boy playing Reason. That's a Tory joke for you.
And only the Tories will laugh at it. The opposition wonders what the effect may be on that poor sick boy. The Tories care only for the jest. But we Whigs have some concern for the humanities.
Do you hear that, Lil? Give them a jest and they answer with a political tirade.
He said something about the boy. The effect.
Go ask him. He'll make you a speech on the matter.
To this pretty world, pretty world. To this pretty world, there came...
Nell stands.
Came heaven sent. Divinely inspired.
Good, good. The great voice of reason.
The blessing.
The boy drops his scepter.
Blessing of our age.
Come on, come on. I spent all morning beating it into your head. You see, my lord, reason is overcome with emotion when it bespeak of you.
Prod him on, Sims.
Go on, a few more of those golden words I taught you, lad.
Somewhere I heard that the human body must breathe through its paws. If you shut those paws...
The boy grasps his own throat.
Man.
He drops a sphere.
Set like a jewel.
Another word, good, gentle reason.
This prince of men.
Nell sits.
This paragon, Lord Mortimer.
The boy drops onto the stage. Two servants rush up to him.
Duck him in the river. A bit of canvas, a handful of coarse sand would get the gilt off.
Master Sims, isn't that harsh treatment for a sick lad?
They have to get the gilt off if he's to be well again.
So you know that?
Know what, Mistress Bowen?
You know that anyone painted over as thick as that poor lad will die.
If I understand you properly, this boy is dying...
One servant taps Sim's arm.
This boy is dead because his paws are clogged by the gilt. Well then, sweet Mistress Bowen, since you are such a stickler for the correct definition, you will grant me the legal fact that this boy died by his own exhalations. You might say...
he poisoned himself.
Nell glares at the laughing Mortimer and others, then sits. The servants carry the boy away.
My lord, have we not had enough of this?
Eh?
Enough of that boring, dull man and his cruelty.
But we're all laughing, Nell.
I am not laughing, my lord.
He shall make you laugh.
Spare me that.
But Nell...
A boy died tonight. A boy who had no mind to guide his thoughts or deeds. Maybe there'll be some concern about that among the Whigs. Certainly none among the Tories.
You'll find they're laughing, too.
A man talks with the wigged Wilkes.
Liberty. That is a great word you Whigs found somewhere. But just the same, you'll end either with a pox or on the gallows.
That, my lord, depends on whether I embrace your sweetheart or your politics.
Nell steps up, peers at the laughing people, and then walks off. Sims leads a young woman wearing a mask by the hand past the small stage.
Here is Alfreda, queen of the artichokes. She will sing for you.
Nell stops.
Here's to the maiden of bashful 15. Here's to the widow of 50. Here's to the flaunting, extravagant queen. And here's to the house...
Lifting her long dress, Nell walks off. A man wearing a dark coat and tricorn hat steps past the Society of Friends meeting house. A woman in a long black dress and bonnet steps from the meeting house, followed by men wearing black-brimmed hats. Two men tip their hats to each other. The stonemason, William, steps outside, then walks up the sidewalk.
Master Hannay!
Across the street, Nell steps from a carriage, then walks toward the stonemason.
This is a strange place to see thee, Mistress Bowen?
A little dull, perhaps, but a good enough place to ask the questions I want to ask.
So far, Mistress Bowen, I found thee more ready with answers than with questions.
Don't worry, my questions are pert enough. First, do you think me a woman of kind heart?
I have told thee so.
Why?
I saw thy face at Bedlam. It had kindness and compassion.
I've never seen that in my mirror. But let's say I grant the fact. Let's say I saw things that moved me to pity. What then, Master Quaker?
Perhaps God sent thee here that thee might find guidance.
From you?
I have not said so.
Well, from whom then?
Perhaps he sent thee here so we might speak together.
Nell takes a few steps, then turns to William.
I've seen things tonight I have no liking for. My friends laughing at sorry idiots brought out from Bedlam to amuse them. A poor boy...
They need not tell me. It's a bad time for the poor, and the people suffer. The ones with wit and the ones without.
And if you feel sorry for them, what do you do about all this?
I do what I can. I'm a stonemason.
How does that help people?
I build well. Let others build as well, and soon this city will become a clean and decent habitation.
But what of me? What can I do? I'm only a jester to bring laughter to Lord Mortimer's dinner table.
Perhaps even in the amusement of Mortimer, there is a way that he can help the poor people in Bedlam. Is not Mortimer a member of the council?
Nell smiles.
Good. You're not such a fool as I thought you. But why don't you take off your hat? Have you no liking for me?
William raises, then lowers his hand.
It is a rule among the friends to uncover only before God.
Wearing a turban, the boy in Mortimer's home studies his own hand. He peers sideways at the waiting Sims.
My lord, we'll see you now, Master Sims.
Sims steps into Mortimer's bedchamber where a wigged man powders Mortimer's wig.
Good morning, Mistress Bowen.
Good morning.
Ah, there, Sims. Ah, sit down and wait a bit. I have news for you.
I trust you enjoyed the fete.
You will hear presently how much I enjoyed it.
Sims, you have no idea what we've decided. Nell has a splendid notion. She wants to turn Bedlam upside down and make all the loonies happy as linnets.
Mistress Bowen is very kind.
You can't imagine what a clever vixen she is, Sims. Thought it all out herself before she even spoke to me. Beds, blankets, some to sew, some to bake, good food, a practical lass.
I can quite understand what Mistress Bowen wants. We've needed good beds, good food in Bedlam for a long while.
You forgot to mention good treatment, Master Sims.
That too, I'm sure we could afford that. You can't imagine the gratitude I bear you, Mistress Bowen. These reforms you propose will make my name stand out in the history of Bedlam.
We knew you'd agree.
I'm overjoyed, my lord.
Good, good. You see, it's done now. Not a bit of trouble.
There is but one small point, the trifling matter of money.
My lord has already thought of that.
Of course, the council will vote the funds.
That's generous of you, my lord, very generous.
How so, Sims?
What sort of generosity?
Does not my lord have property in Moorfields?
A dozen dwelling houses, a warehouse, two inns. You see, Sims, I know my accounts.
And I know your properties. They are taxable by the Institute. Therefore, my lord, this reform will cost you not less than 500 guineas in additional taxes. But what is that to you, my lord? A mere bagatelle. Some little gift you gladly give to Mistress Bowen.
I will relinquish that little gift, Master Sims.
I gave you no gift, Nell.
She's merely speaking of a gift she's not going to have. Now take Master Wilkes. He'd never be so generous. He would say, loonies don't vote.
But that's true. There's nothing to be had from them.
You are going to do this as a good deed, my lord.
500 guineas.
There would be so much I would have to do without. Now we'll have to forget this whim of yours.
It is not a whim, my lord. It is the first thing I've ever asked of you.
But my lord has to keep up appearances at court. You've no idea what an expense that is to a man.
That's true. You have no idea, Nell, what a great responsibility it is to be rich. What an expense.
It's simply this, my lord. I've asked you to do a good deed, and you find the very thought of it too expensive.
You have no right to speak to me that way, Nell.
I've all the rights of having put up with you for nearly a year, my lord. Trying to make you laugh and then listening to that fat laugh of yours as it comes rumbling out of your fat throat.
Put up with me. Put up with me.
I said so.
But look what I've done for you. You'd be camping in the rain on Strathmore Common with the other strolling players if you hadn't caught my eye.
Do you call that weak and watery vessel your eye? I would not want to look at the world through it. I would not want to be a dull man forever in need of amusement. I would not want to bribe and be bribed, to fawn upon the king and kick the commoner. In short, my lord, I would not want to be Lord Mortimer.
You would not want. You would not.
Nor do I want to be with you. Not for an instant longer. Maybe being rich and great and powerful is infectious. It's a disease I don't want to catch. Goodbye, my lord.
Such angry words.
Nell leaves. She steps through the antechamber and into the hallway. The boy knocks two stones on a string together. Mortimer opens the door for Sims.
Of course, as I pointed out to you, my lord, you have every right to take legal steps.
You've been very helpful, Sims.
But it grieves me, my lord, to have been the cause of this quarrel.
It's not your fault. She quarreled with me. She insulted me.
They bow to each other. Stepping back inside, Mortimer closes the door. The boy holds out his hand, palm up.
May I guide you to the door, Master Sims?
Sims dons his black hat, then follows the boy, who opens the door for him. Sims leaves. The boy follows.
You know Lord Mortimer's signature. Is this not it?
I can recognize a pig's tracks when I see them.
Then you know I have the right to remove the furniture which he loaned you.
Loaned, as he call it? He and that loathsome Sims.
It's all legal, all by order.
Oh, take the things and get out.
That's not Claude Mortimer's. That's not Claude Mortimer's.
Leave Carl alone. She's no present to be given and taken back.
She's been with Mistress Bowen since Mistress Bowen played Aurora in The Rivals. We were very good in that.
A man holding a walking stick motions to another man who grasps a table holding the parrot. They leave.
Serves me right, Barney. A kind heart butters no parsnips.
But what shall we do, Mistress Bowen? We've got nothing but the clothes we wear and poor Paul.
Paul? Paul's enough.
And remember, my dear, if gin is offered, you must take wine. It's more genteel.
A blonde woman.
But I like gin. Makes me merry.
He'll be merry enough on wine.
Well, you tell me Lord Mortimer likes a witty girl.
Best leave the wit to me. I'll make you seem witty.
Oh, I can crack a joke well enough.
Not in good company, my dear niece. You're not accustomed to it, you know.
I've known some gentlemen.
But this is a lord. A man from whose largesse many blessings can come to the family of Sims. And just for a little laughter, that's all he wants. To be amused.
A fine lord indeed. Mocked by a parrot.
But this parrot is our key to open my lord's friendship to you. Now remember, you were offended. You offered money. You...
A servant steps in and bows. Sims and his niece stand and walk into an airy room, where Lord Mortimer sits at a desk writing.
My lord, a dreadful thing.
Mortimer stands.
Pardon me, lord. This is my niece, Kitty.
Charming person. She does you honor, Sims. But have you heard the latest news of my lady? Brave Mistress Nell. What a jest she's hit upon.
You mean the parrot, my lord? It is because of that that we are here.
A great bit of japery, Sims. What a vixen.
I hardly thought to find you in such humor.
Oh, it's only a jest. Nell has the bird for sale in the marketplace.
letting it scream that silly ditty. Lord Mortimer is like a pig. His brain is small and his belly big. All London's come to laugh at the bird.
So they have, and it does you no good, my lord. That joke can make your proud name a mockery.
Ah, the bird won't sing too long. I've sent Pompey to buy it.
That girl holds the bird at a high enough price.
My niece, knowing of my affection for you, tried to buy the bird. She offered 20 guineas and was refused.
Oh, Mistress Bowen wants more honey on her bread than that, Sims. Pompey has a purse with 100 guineas in it.
100 guineas for a bird?
Could you have some wine, Mistress Sims?
Oh, wine is too French for me, my lord. It's the way I feel about men. I like men to be as big as beer and as strong as gin. Beer has a head on it, you know, and you can't say that for wine. And gin has muscle in it, and you can't say that for wine either.
Bless me, I never heard anyone put it that way before.
There is much to be said for our national institutions.
Come in.
Now wearing a tricorn hat, the boy steps in. He holds up a small purse.
She refused?
She said it was not enough.
What sort of game is this?
Mr. Spohen told me to tell you the bird would remain for sale, and that you could sell every property you owned and not have money enough to buy it.
So that's the way the wind blows, my lord.
Malign me. The girl digs her spurs too deep.
Sims takes Lord Mortimer aside.
My lord, we can always make her my guest.
At Bedlam?
Sims nods.
No, no. She's as sane as you and I.
Was Colby mad? He was my guest.
We've been good comrades, Nell and I. I'll not do that.
As you wish, my lord.
Here, my lord.
A shot glass.
Confusion to your enemies.
They drink.
It's a shrewd trick. You can't restrain a parrot from slander. You can't exercise the right of privacy against a bird. But I think I have a way, my lord.
Another drink, my lord. It'll make you a lion.
I'm an angry man.
There are laws against the depredations of livestock. Is not a parrot livestock? Are you not suffering great loss? You know that he who steals my purse steals trash, but he
Why,
who...
Why, I heard that at the playhouse.
What do you suggest?
We can swear out a writ of seizure, send a bailiff for the parrot and have it here within the hour.
We could do that.
Indeed we can.
Arrest a parrot? I'll drink on that.
A bailiff drags Neil's valet away.
All right, come along. Come along.
William follows Nell in.
I told thee no good would come of it. We cannot mock thy friends this way.
Mock him? You wish I'd only mocked him when I finished.
Softly.
I swore I'd wring its neck. Give me that bird, Barney.
Your gifts you can take back, my lord. But the parrot was mine, is mine, and remains mine as long as I want.
William steps between Mortimer and the parrot.
We must be careful of others' property.
Curse you, man. You shall fight me for this.
Lord Mortimer draws a sword.
Draw, man, draw.
He can see I carry no weapon. I do not fight nor brawl with other men.
You shall fight me.
I cannot.
Fight, or I'll run you through. Will you fight?
Knocking the sword aside, William grabs Mortimer.
My friend, thee has no quarrel with me.
Let me go!
Breaking free, Mortimer falls backward onto his bed. Sims and the bailiff rush to help him up.
Thee must not mock thy friend.
Holding the parrot, Nell walks out with William. Mortimer glares after her. A stonemason knocks a chisel against a block of stone. Wearing a thick apron, William steps to Nell and Varney, who holds the parrot.
Thee can earn an honest living for thyself.
I had to sew my costumes when I was on the stage.
2 shillings a week and all found for a seamstress.
One can live well on that if one is frugal.
Well, what would I do with Varney? Who'd have him?
William squeezes Varney's upper arm.
He has not strength enough for a mason, Varney.
You see?
Just the same. I'll give Varney work. He shall sweep up the dust here. He has strength enough for that.
He sweeps and I sew. All very fine, but not very exciting. What do you think about it, Varney?
I like a merry life, Mr. Spohen.
And so, by blazes, so do I. Everyone makes his living with his own tricks. My tricks are not yours, Master Stonemason.
If I may say a word, Mistress Bowen, you still have many friends.
That I have. It's Captain Stafford. Oh, but he's always talking about Fontenoy. It's Armiston and Wilkes. There's Wilkes. That devil Wilkes.
In a printer's shop, a man in a square hat turns a large handle. A wooden slat slides out of a machine, revealing a large sheet of paper. The man picks up the paper, with a drawing on one side, and hands it to Mortimer and Sims. On the paper, a drawing of a man, that devil Wilkes. Across the room, Wilkes talks with Nell.
So far as I'm concerned, dear Mistress Bowen, you need not teach your parrot any special phrases for my benefit.
Am I to understand from that, Master Wilkes, that you're not interested? Not in Bedlam, nor in me?
I did not mean that. I meant only that I am a different sort of man from Lord Mortimer. I am not easily pleased.
I think you expect too much, Master Wilkes.
I offer more. You want to fight the nastiness and corruption of Bedlam. I offer you political alliance with John Wilkes, whom His Gracious Majesty has pleased to call that devil. Bring me the evidence and I'll be pleased to take it to court.
Let us say that puts a brighter face on matters, Master Wilkes.
One gives a girl a kiss to seal a certain kind of bargain, no?
This is a rather public place, Master Wilkes.
But one shakes hands with a comrade and a friend.
They shake hands.
This is a real blow at Wilkes.
That is a blow I leave you to administer. I have one of his to ward away.
Sims, Nell, and Mortimer sit at a table.
So you see, Mistress Bowen, my lord thought it would be best to make friends again.
On your advice, I suppose, and for some purpose of your own.
My lord, speak to the girl.
Every word he says is true, and better put than I could say it.
Well, so we're friends again. You go your way, and I go my way.
But friends are not that off-handed with each other, Mistress Bowen. My lord would like to be kind to you.
I'm duly warned. Go on.
My lord thinks you've been looking rather pale of late. Perhaps the waters at Bath. A rest.
Sims holds out a large bill, which Nell takes.
My lord, you know that I have a contempt for certain kinds of money. How deep that contempt is, I'm about to show you.
Nell places the bill between two crackers, then bites into it. Mortimer glowers as she crumples up the rest of the money, then hurls it to the floor.
The Bank of England thanks you for £300.
Nell slaps Sims. She leaves. Sims stands, then grabs a quill pen.
Tomorrow, after the Commission for Lunacy examines her, she'll strike no more blows. Not at you, nor at me. Here. You sign here.
Confound me, Sims, I can't sign this. She's not mad. She's not a danger to herself and others, as it says here.
Sign, my lord. She's a danger to my position and your properties. Alone, she means nothing. But with Wilkes behind her, she's more dangerous to us than any madwoman.
Mortimer peers at Sims, then signs the document. Sims slowly smiles. Elsewhere, Nell steps into a room where a group of wigged men sit around a U-shaped table.
Well, gentlemen, here is your lunatic.
You're Nell Bowen?
I'm 23 years of age, born at Rye. My parents are dead, and I have no husband or child. What more would you wish to know?
The Commission of Lunacy will frame the questions for you, Mistress Bowen.
Ask away.
Do you know your alphabet?
I know A from Z, and I can read and write as readily as any man I see before me. Perhaps a little better.
Do you know the difference between right and wrong?
What is right for me is wrong for you. That much I know, and vice versa.
Two of the officials nod at each other.
Oh, don't fool yourselves. A merry answer does not make me a fool, gentlemen. Ask me a sensible question, and you shall have a sensible answer.
Sims walks in. Stepping around the table, he sits next to an official wearing a long wig of white curls, then whispers into the man's ear.
Mistress Bowen, is it true that some days past you refused the sum of 100 gold guineas for a parrot not worth 5 shillings?
I had my reasons. It was a jest.
You know your sums?
If 2 and 2 make 4, I do.
Knowing that one number added to another makes a greater number, I presume you know a large sum of money from a small sum.
I only know that I like large sums better than I like small sums.
Then why did you refuse 100 guineas for a parrot worth 5 shillings?
I have told you, it was a jest.
Knowing the value of money, Mistress Bowen, can you explain why it was you ate a banknote?
For a jest. Master Sims knows why I ate the money. To show my contempt for it.
Is that how one shows contempt?
No. But at that moment, it was the only way to show contempt. I was angry, and it was the first thing that occurred to me.
Do thoughts like that always occur to you when you're angry?
Surely everyone does foolish things sometimes. At a whim, for a prank.
Is it wise to eat money?
But it was a jest. Gentlemen, would you permit me to communicate with Master John Wilkes? He will speak for me.
Sims and the official exchange glances. Sims shakes his head.
This is not a court. You are not in need of any witnesses but your own sanity. and we shall judge the worth of that.
Leaning to his side, the official whispers into Sim's ear, then Sim's whispers back. The official nods. He dips a quill pen into ink, then writes. Sim's smiles. The official sprinkles sand onto the wet ink.
Mistress Bowen, you have asked for voluntary commitment to enter St. Mary of Bethlehem's asylum. The charges for your care and keep to be borne by my Lord Mortimer. I have here the commission's approval of your request. The commission has adjudged you insane.
The men stand.
But I made no petition to enter Bedlam.
Perhaps you did it as a jest, Mistress Bird.
You're not going to put me in bed.
The men file out.
Not for a little joke. Not for playing a trick. My lords, gentlemen, please listen. I am of sound mind. I know what I do. I know what I say. I did not ask for admission to Bedlam. Please. Please.
At the doorway, Sims turns to Nell, then leaves. Holding her head in her hand, Nell cries, then drops to the floor. In the dim room covered with straw, Nell sits with her back to a wall. All around her, inmates sleep on the floor. Nell peers around herself. The door bursts open. Sims and two other men carrying lanterns step inside. Sims walks over to Nell.
Here in Bedlam, my dear, we can't feed you banknotes. Try chewing on this.
He shoves a coin into her mouth. Nell takes it out. The men leave.
I want a biscuit, Polly. I want a biscuit.
Polly want a biscuit?
Mortimer feeds the parrot.
You see, Varney, now that he's mine, I've already taught him a new and original trick.
Yes, my lord.
But Mistress Bowen must have been here.
William talks with the turbaned boy. Kitty walks in and removes a shawl. The boy opens the door for her.
Ah, my love. And how did you spend the night?
Kitty glances around herself as she steps forward.
Going on a voyage, my lord?
Voyage? Oh, no, not a voyage. Just a trip to the country to ride. To smell the innocent air. To listen to the twitter of the birds. To rusticate.
I see. To rusticate.
I would invite you, my dear, but it's a bachelor affair. Sports, you know. Manly things.
I see. Well, all good things must end, my lord.
She opens a bottle.
I'll have a bit of the gin.
She pours herself a shot, then drinks it.
And another little sip to get rid of the dry taste of piety.
Piety? I thought there was precious little of that in this house.
There's a Quaker out there who wants to see you. Pompey's sending him about his business.
Such a person has never been known in this household.
Come now. He must know that to be an untruth. Mistress Bowen had tea with my lord only yesterday.
Your young lady was the one who was telling tales. There's been no woman in this household but Mr. Sin since I can remember. So they tell me.
Well, never mind.
William leaves. The boy sits, then bites into a biscuit. Varney steps into the antechamber.
Where's the Quaker?
He's been and gone.
He must have just left.
That's likely.
Varney leaves.
Apples, apples.
In the street, Varney runs up to William.
Master Henny, Master Henny.
I'll tell you where she is, Master Henny. I'll tell you where she is. They put her in Bedlam.
In Bedlam?
Yesterday they summoned her. She's there now.
Well, friend, thee must come with me. We shall go to Bedlam.
No, no, I can't go with you. I'm employed by my lord. You see, Master Stonemason, I have to live, and you yourself said I didn't have enough muscle for honest work.
It's enough that thee is an honest man, Varney, that thee ran all this way to tell me where she is.
In Bedlam, an inmate writes with a quill pen. Another inmate standing by a pillar reads a book. Nell stands against another pillar.
Is that your name they call?
Nell nods.
How do they know I'm here?
They don't know. Some of our poor companions spend their days looking out the window. If they hear a new cry, they repeat it. Then others take it up, and so it goes.
But my name, how do they know it?
Someone must have shouted in the street. Perhaps someone trying to reach you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Nell hurries across the room to the barred window where other inmates look out on the street. She squeezes past them and studies the street. She steps away from the window. A man touches her hand. With her other hand, Nell pushes his hand away and runs. Later, William enters Bedlam from the street. Inside, a well-dressed man hands the warders his walking stick and some money. They hang the walking stick on the wall. The man and a woman follow another warder toward the doors to the main room. William offers money to the warders.
You can't come in.
By George Sims' order, I suppose.
Even so.
May I see Sims?
And quickly, too.
I have been refused admittance.
That is unfortunate. A new ruling, you understand.
I understand only that I am a free man, that I have money in my hand. He has no legal right to deny me entry to a place where others have been admitted.
Quite true, quite true.
Well?
The warder will take your tuppence. And now if you'll leave your arms at the arms rack.
But I have no arms. I'm at the Society of Friends.
Then I'm afraid we must return your tuppence.
But why?
Did you not quote the law to me? Let me then quote the law to you. It is a rule of our institute that all who enter the main hall must hang their arms upon that rack.
But I have no arms.
Since you have none, I cannot let you enter.
They cannot deny me entry for such cause.
I must. Save yourself a walk, Quaker. It's locked.
William walks partway down the hall, stops, and turns around.
It's a rule, Master Quaker, and I break no rules.
Blast me! Brother Hannay, sauntering as if it were a holiday.
On my own business, friend Smith, and without profanity.
And without this good job of work that we have, Hannay.
I bid on it.
And found Master Sims' way of doing business a little strange, huh?
We've the work, we've the will. Let's at it, boys.
Three stonemasons try to move a large block.
But he hasn't the knack of it.
William kicks the block, which slides.
Huh, thanks, Hannay.
Maybe you'd give us a hand.
There are but three of us.
All right, just as leave.
You call.
One, two, heave all.
William and the masons lift two blocks on a wooden stretcher. They carry it toward Bedlam.
One, and two, down we go.
Inside Bedlam, they set the stretcher beside a partially built wall.
Thanks, Hannay.
He is welcome.
Now you're here, Hannay, you can see all Bedlam without paying your tuppence. Can he, lads?
That he can. All the wonders of Bedlam and for nothing.
That I would like to see.
This corridor leads to the main room. It's a little dark, maybe, but if you get to the end of it, you'll get an eyeful.
If they don't mind, I'll go and look.
William enters a darkened doorway. He walks toward a hallway lined with cells. He steps with one hand against the wall. An inmate reaches through cell bars and grabs William's hand. William pulls away and backs against another cell. A woman presses against the door. William strides away and more inmates reach at him through cell doors. Some shake their fists at him. William enters another room. He peers through a barred window in the main room where Nell sits alone in a chair below a crude drawing of a house.
Nell? Nell Bowen?
Nell sits forward and glances around the room.
Nell Bowen?
Nell stands and looks about. William cups his hands around his mouth.
Nell Bowen! Nell Bowen!
Nell turns around. William waves at her.
Over here, Nell.
Nell runs across the room but stops short of the door, startled.
Come, Nell. Nell!
Nell rushes to the door.
Come to take me away?
No. There is no way.
Find Wilkes. Wilkes will get me out of here.
I'd thought of that. I'll seek him out. But until he can free thee must be patient.
Patient? How can I be patient? I'm terrified. These people are like beasts.
So thee has that same thought. The same thought as Sims.
No, but they frighten me. They're dirty, savage, mindless, disgusting.
Thee wanted to help them. That's why they put thee here. For trying to aid them.
I still want to aid them. But I cannot here. Not here where they're all about me. All I want is release or a weapon to defend myself.
Thee has thy kindness and thy courage. They can be sword and buckler to thee in this place.
I want better weapons. I want something more than my naked hands to help me if there should be trouble. Give me a weapon.
Thee knows I carry no sword.
Anything.
I carry nothing that would harm my fellow creatures.
Your trowel.
That is to build with.
It has a point. It has a handle. Would you have me maimed, scratched, scarred? My face.
The Lord will not let it happen.
Give me the trowel and I'll not let it happen. Look at my face again. Look close. Shall it be scarred?
William hands Nell a trowel through the bars.
God forgive me for what I do.
Forgiven or not, at least I can defend myself. Now get to Master Wilkes. Wilkes will have me out of here like that.
William leaves. Nell grips the trowel and turns away from the door. A large man in a cage lunges at her through the bars and she cowers. Later in the print shop.
I haven't seen Wilkes in the last week.
He's never at home.
He's electioneering.
Where?
Anywhere in the kingdom.
But it's a matter of import, grave import. A woman's reason hangs on it. I must see him.
He's ordered pamphlets and posters from me. He must come here, and when he does, I'll tell him.
I'll come back tomorrow.
Nighttime in Bedlam. A candle on a table lights a small area of the main room. The writing inmate pens at the table. The reading inmate sets his book and a deck of cards on the table. Nell sits next to a nearby pillar.
We might ask her, Master Todd. She seems quite ladylike, quite sane. Or, as I might express myself before the bar, compos mentis in lex.
Todd, the writer, nods.
Then I shall ask her. We can have Dan, and the four of us can play Feroli.
Todd clears the table. The man puts on a long coat and approaches Nell.
Madam, would you care to join us? We're going to play Feroli.
That's kind of you, but I have no money.
Money? We play on our word.
I have a wealth of words. I don't cheat, but I warn you, I'm not above amending the mistakes of fortune.
The man gestures toward the table and they walk to it.
This, Mistress Bourne, is Oliver Todd. He won't speak to you, not to me, but there's no harm in him, and he writes and reasons well. And this is Dan. Sometimes he fancies himself a dog, but he has no malice in him, and he remembers how to play cards. I am Long, Sidney Long, the Crown Solicitor, whose enemies will not let him practice at the bar. I, the most skilled of them all. I have many enemies. Many, many enemies.
I understand.
I shouldn't have told you that. Oh, but believe me, we who are near this pillar are the safe ones, the good ones, the wisest. That's why they let us have the candle. But the rest, you must be careful of the rest.
I am careful.
Well, let's begin the play.
Long pulls a chair forward for Nell, and she sits.
Now, I will hold the bank. £20,000.
He pretends to spread money.
£5 for a card.
£5.
Long deals Nell one card. Todd mimics pushing money forward. Long deals Todd one card.
5 whippets, 10 bassets, 1 gazehound.
Dan mimes pushing money forward, and Long deals him 3 cards.
Anyone wish another card?
£5.
Anyone else? Banco.
Paroli.
Fortune smiles at your first play. What card?
Knave of spades.
You win.
Nell looks over her shoulder. Long shuffles the cards.
Oh.
Long deals.
8 bulldogs.
What's that?
Oh, a poor wretch. Sims gave him a dose of iron this morning. The chains are scruffing his flesh.
Will the war does not help him?
They've heard too many groans to bother.
But what about you? Don't you ever help the others?
Why should we help? We are the people of the pillar. A card?
Wait. I can't play with that going on. May I have the candle?
Be careful of the straw.
Nell carries the candle into a darkened room where inmates sit and lie on the straw-covered floor. Nell explores the room, stepping over sleeping inmates. An empty chair rests against a wall. The candlelight casts her shadow on the wall. Nell raises the candle above her head. Near an unlit fireplace, two flat iron bars arc over a man's head, one from front to back and one from side to side. They overlap on top of his head. Chains bind the man's hands to the bars and wrap around the back of his neck.
Do your chains hurt you?
He nods.
Where does it hurt?
He moves his arm.
Here? Would it help if I put a bit of cloth there to ease your arm?
He nods again. Nell sets the candle on the mantel, then bends over and pulls up the hem of her dress. She lays the trowel on the floor. She rips cloth from her petticoat, then tears the cloth into strips. On the floor, a hand reaches out and takes the trowel. Nell tucks the strips under the chain around the man's neck.
Better?
The man nods. Nell plucks the candle from the mantel. She pushes straw with her foot, then glances at the man one more time before leaving. In the main room, the female inmate, Mortimer called a dove, stands against a wall. Nell returns to the table and sits.
He's quiet now. That was kind of you.
It's just that I don't care for sad music with my game of parole.
A card?
£5.
Todd holds up two fingers. Mortimer approaches behind them. He stops by the dove and pokes her face.
Any others?
£15.
She remains motionless.
Anyone else? Banco.
A very pleasant group you make, dear people. So nice to find you here amongst the upper classes, Mistress Bowen, but that's exactly where I expected you to be. It's a law of physics. The lighter elements, like scum, rise to the top.
Thank you, Master Sims. A delicate compliment.
I see you've joined what little we have of society, the group around the pillar. Is this the brotherhood your Quaker friend preaches? But perhaps you're afraid amongst the others.
I'm not afraid.
Then you are forgotten.
Forgotten what?
Forgotten that you were going to reform Bedlam. Cleanliness, soft beds for the delight of the patients, good treatment. Well, you've been here a week, Mistress Bowen, and your only friends are these, our nobility. The brotherhood of man.
Give me clean straw, I'll make beds for them. Bandages, I'll bind their wounds. Water and soap?
That I would delight to see. You shall have water, you shall have soap, you shall have straw enough. I hope you make good use of them.
I will, never fear.
And I leave you to dream of these Augean labors, and may your dreams be sweet and cleanly.
Mortimer grins, then strolls away. Later, a man wearing a tricorn hat stands before Todd, who writes,
But where is it? You promised a chapter for today. I appeal to you, Master Long. Is it fair? I support his family, feed his children, even pay my tuppence to come in and get my script, and it is not ready.
We've been busy. We've been helping Mistress Bowen.
Mistress Bowen? Who is she?
Long points, and the man turns around. Nell tucks a sheet into a straw mattress and places a pillow on the mattress. Watching, a number of inmates stand.
Oh, a new female warder. Now, about the next chapter.
No, not a warder, Master Gray. An inmate like ourselves who does all she can to help her fellow sufferers.
But what can she do?
As Long flips the pages of his book, drawings on the corners appear to move.
She do, you ask? She can feed those who haven't wit enough to feed themselves. She can wash the helpless, cheer the despondent. She can be. She is an angel in this darkness.
Very interesting. But this book you have, those drawings.
Oh, the pictures. You don't know half their wonder, Master Gray. If I could only get a light behind these pages, I could throw them large as life upon the wall.
Aye, that's not a bad notion. One could charge admission. You could even tell the story Todd's writing that way.
Oh, but you forget. It's because of these pictures that I'm here. That and because I'm the best lawyer in England. I am the most skilled of them all.
Yes, of course. And you, Oliver, you'd best finish that chapter by tomorrow, or I shall withdraw my support from your family. Understand?
Todd nods and the man leaves.
Dan, did you chance to see a trowel?
Trowel? I'll build you a wall. A wall that high.
Master Long, have you seen a trowel?
I beg your pardon?
A trowel, a mason's instrument. I mislaid it some days ago. I'd like it back.
Yes. A trowel.
I'm not mad, Master Long. I had a trowel.
Oh, certainly, Mr. Spawn. We'll help you find it.
You think I'm mad. Sometimes I think I've gone mad myself. Scrubbing and making beds and all for people who don't even know I'm trying to help them.
They know.
Mortimer enters the room. Two other men wait by the doors and he waves them forward. Dan looks over his shoulder at Mortimer, who raises his hand to strike but instead shoves Dan aside.
Good morning, Mistress Bone. What a happy place this has become. Everything is so much cleaner. The idiots even have their faces washed. Such a little time with this wonderful change in bedlam. What wonders will you not accomplish in a lifetime? Madam, you are to be congratulated.
What do you want?
I want only to reward you. Did you not ask for a separate sleeping apartment?
I'd like to sleep in peace. The main room is noisy at night.
And I have a room for you. A pretty chamber, if you will come with me. Unfortunately, you will have to share this comfortable apartment with one other. But I'm sure you won't mind that.
Better one than 100.
This is your new chamber, my dear lady.
He points to the cage where the large man is shackled to one of the bars. In a different room, a warder holds another chain taut, while a second warder drives a spike through one of the links and into a block of wood. They drag the chain to the cell and attach it to the bars and unshackle the man.
Won't you enter?
You've not driven me mad yet, Sims. I would not go in there.
And I wanted so much to please you. Wait. This was to show you that all those mawkish theories you learned from the Quaker are lies. Men are not brothers. Men are not born good and kind. Even the mindless ones are savage and must be ruled with force.
I know your thoughts on the matter, Sims. They do not interest me.
The others, yes, you can prove the little value of gentleness. But look at this man. Look at him and tell me that kind words and tender deeds can rule him. Look!
I am looking. Proves nothing.
But you don't dare enter the cage with him. That proves much. That proves the falsity of all that you've come to believe.
It does not.
Then enter the cage. Gentle him with a word. Conquer him with kindness. Or admit that your Quaker lies.
Nell creeps toward the cage. Holding a key, Mortimer follows.
You would enter?
She nods, and he unlocks and opens the cage door. She enters. The man in the cage backs into a corner. Shadows fall across his face. He wears a tattered sleeveless shirt. Mortimer shuts the door. The man shuffles toward Nell. She backs up a step.
My friend, you do not wish to hurt me, nor I you. Perhaps you'd like to talk. I will listen to you. I know. You're trying to remember.
The man runs his hand through his short hair.
Someday you will. You will remember. You will remember. Someday you will remember.
Nell glares at Mortimer, who holds one of the cage bars as he watches the man. He leaves. In the print shop, Varney, William, and Wilkes.
And the bailiff came and she went with him to Bedlam.
Apparently, Sims fears an investigation. Men have rid themselves of unwanted wives for that sweet expedient. But it takes Sims to forestall criticism with imprisonment.
I shall not believe such ill, even of him. But she is there. I've spoken with her. She's as sane as thee or me.
Mistress Nell, with that bright, quick mind of hers, saner than either a politician or a Quaker. This is still England, Hanny, and we have laws here. Laws of right and justice. And I shall see that Sims feels their full weight. We'll have Nell out of Bedlam in a twinkle, never fear.
In Bedlam, a man and a woman gaze at a book.
That whole house of Hull rejoiced with Subas, a bird called the Sprite which breaks the eagle's egg.
That's not right.
Let Scroop, house of Scroop, rejoice with fig wine, Palmer, Primarium, Vinum. That's not so. Palmer, Primum is the word.
That's not right.
Let Hollingstead, house of Hollingstead, rejoice with Sister Terraria's herb of good fellowship. Praise the name of the Lord, September 1762.
That's not the word of truth. The word of truth is peace.
The woman grabs the book.
Well, it's Betty. Stop. We were fighting over truth.
Wiser people than you have fought over it, Betty.
The man from the cage kneels next to Betty. Mortimer enters, locking the door behind him. He strolls toward Nell.
Oh, Mistress Bowen, a word with you. I have good news. You're to have a new hearing before the commission.
When?
When it pleases the commission. It will please them to hold your hearing tomorrow afternoon. I'm delighted for your sake. Indeed, I am so pleased. I want to do everything possible to make sure that your hearing is a success, that you will be released.
Thank you.
In fact, I've ordered my most beneficent remedy for you.
The man from the cage cowers.
A remedy, Master Sims?
Have they not told you?
She looks toward Long and Todd, then shakes her head at Mortimer.
It's my own invention. A cure. A specific for the lax and wandering mind. Look at him. When he came here, he had but one concern, to remember something he had forgotten. I tried to help him with my remedy, but perhaps I was not drastic enough.
I need no cure.
Just to be sure, Mistress Bowen.
No.
I've given you an invitation. Now I must speak as your physician. Come with me.
I'll take my chances with the commissioners. I need no cure.
The apothecary general of Bedlam, I order you.
No.
If you insist upon it, I must force you.
Force me? Here? Look around you.
Do you think your friends will help you?
I've helped them.
You expect them to band together and overwhelm me? If they could reason so, they would not be here.
I warn you, Sims. They know me. They know I've helped them, been kind
and
to
them. And so they love you and will aid you. Again, that Quaker nonsense.
Inmates grab him.
Let go of me!
Hold him!
Warders, help! Warders!
Shot away, Master Sims! Your men are used to Bedlam and its noises. They've heard too many cries to pay attention to one. As for me, I'll just borrow your keys, Master Sims.
She pulls keys from his coat pocket and rushes for the doors. Todd rises from his chair and meets her at the doors.
No, Mistress Bowen, not that way. There's a warder in the hall and another at the front door.
But you heard him threaten me with a treatment. I cannot stay here.
There's a little window that is left unbarred.
I think I know that window, Master Todd. You must be mad if you think I'd climb through that window as Master Colby did and others before him, I dare say.
I'm not mad, Mistress Bowen. I'm not like the others here. I've been placed here by my family to keep me from drink, so that I may write and support them. I know that little window is dangerous, designed for a death trap. But those who tried before were men of small strength.
I'm no Hercules.
Tom could lift you through that window.
Now, you have more reason than the rest. I expect more of you. You know what I can do, don't you?
Long nods.
Then go to the door. Call the warders for me. Do as I say.
But the rest, what will they do to me?
Don't be afraid of their vengeance. They can't think far enough ahead for that. They're lunatics. They've been tried and found incompetent by fair trial.
Trial? Trial. Quo erantur corpus delicti cum grano salis.
Ah, yes, sir. I'd forgotten you were a lawyer.
A lawyer, sir. I am a judge. I am a judge. I, the most skilled of them all. And you shall be judged. Judged, I say.
No.
Venus, hold this man.
You can go through that door.
try him. Try him.
A fair trial for Master Sims. A fair trial.
Mistress Bowen, speak to them. Please speak to them. I beseech you.
Give Master Sims a fair trial.
The inmates drag Sims forward. Nell and Tom, the man from the cell, leave through a side door. Later, Nell peers out a window at a three-story building and the street below. She gazes upward.
Tom, you must get up on the roof. You're to go first, and then you're to pull me up. Up. You understand?
Tom nods. They back out of the window, then Tom climbs onto the sill. He pulls himself onto the roof. Nell climbs onto the windowsill.
Tom. Tom.
Tom reaches down and Nell grabs his arm. He looks up. Nell dangles.
Tom. 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 Tom.
The moon and stars shine in the sky.
Tom.
Tom looks down at Nell and heaves her onto the roof. To the edge of the roof above them and slowly move to another portion of roof above a gate. Elsewhere, an inmate wears a towel over his head like a wig.
I'm Solomon the Wise. Split him in two. Split him in two.
And so we have brought this man before you to answer for these crimes which I shall number for you. Neglect, cruelty, whippings, beatings, dirty straw to lie upon, chains, starvation, stealing our food. For all these crimes, my lord and gentlemen of the jury, I ask justice.
Inmates charge Mortimer.
Let me speak. My friends, I beg of you, let me speak.
William.
Hush. This is God's house.
I broke free from Bedlam.
They should not have run from there. They were to have a new hearing tomorrow.
If I'd lived until then. He had some treatment he was to give me. A treatment that made even the maddest of them shudder to hear. I ran, and they have him now.
Who has him?
The loonies. They have seized him and are trying him in mockery. They will kill him. It is what he deserves.
Shh. They should not speak that way of any man.
They will. They will kill him.
Then they must go to him. They must speak to the poor afflicted ones and save him.
Save him?
Can one know what is in his mind? Can one know what sickness lies in it? As they were kind to those in Bedlam, so they must be kind to those whose sickness forces them to hurt their fellow man.
But Sims...
Has not Sims a madness that they can pity? Come. We'll get Wilkes. He'll help us.
In Bedlam, Dan and another inmate hold a wigless Sims.
But why, Sims? Why?
I did not want to hurt you. I did not want to put chains on you, to steal from you, to starve you.
But you did. And now it's our turn.
You will not dare harm me. They'll load you with chains, scourge you with the cat. Then you shall really know what cruelty can be. I warn you.
Your vengeance isn't our present concern. What you've done concerns us.
Why you did it? I've told you because I had to. Even as you do things because you have to do them. Even as you drink.
But why? Why?
I was frightened. Did you beat us out of fright, Sims? Did you starve us out of fear?
Split him in two.
Is that why you still threaten us if harm comes to you?
The rods, the chains, I warn you. You spoke of your fear. Fear of what? Speak quickly. Of the great world. The great world of this age that gave me my place, the comforts and the authority, what little I have of riches. What that world thinks, I must think. What they do, I must do.
But you know better. You're a scholar, a man of letters.
What I know means nothing. I've had to fawn and toady and make a mock of myself till all I could hear was the world laughing at me. But once I had what I wanted, this, my place here...
You were afraid to lose it.
I could not. I had to please those to whose favor I owed everything. I was afraid.
You had to strike us.
Yes, yes. Can't you understand?
I understand. And our punishment?
Let me go. There will be no punishment.
He is sane. There is a fear within him. A fear that strikes out, that claws and tears at the world like a singed cat. He is sane.
He will not punish us. He is sane.
The man is sane.
Split him in two.
No, no, wait, wait, I say. This man has been judged sane. He has no place here. He must leave. You cannot harm him. No, it is the order of the court that he is sane and that he shall be free. Bailiffs, release the prisoner.
The inmates let go of Mortimer's arms, and he backs away. As he approaches the dove, she pulls the masonry trowel from under her shawl, raises it above her head, and strikes Mortimer, who slumps to the floor. The inmates surround him.
They will punish us for this. All of us. The apothecary general is dead. We must hide him somewhere. We must hide him so that they will never know.
Several inmates lift Mortimer and carry him away. They pause by the cells. Long nods toward the partially built wall. They carry Mortimer to the wall and deposit him behind it. Two inmates use trowels to collect mortar and apply it to the wall. The inmates lift a stone block into place, then lift more blocks. Mortimer opens his eyes, which widen as the inmates lift the final block into place. Later, Nell Wilkes William and the head of the Commission of Lunacy walk through the main room of Bedlam. Inmates stand at attention.
And when we got here, Master Wilkes, he'd gone. Long said he just left, disappeared.
Yes, that's all I could get out of Long. But I know they must have killed him. It's so preposterous, Master Wilkes. A man like Sims doesn't just disappear.
And that's precisely why he disappeared. They tried him, found him guilty of sanity, then let him go. Can you imagine what was in his mind? The mind of this man who'd sworn by all that was holy to aid and protect these people. Can you imagine his feeling of guilt?
William touches fresh mortar on the wall.
I think that's what drove him to run away.
No, they killed him. Killed him and hid his body somewhere.
You can't prove that without finding his body.
We shall find it, and we shall punish them.
Yes, I know. The chains, the beatings. I tell you, it's no good. What you need here is a better man to fill the post that Sims has fled from. And after him, a better man. And so on, until things here are as they should be. All kindness and care for these poor sick people.
Nell grabs William's wrist.
You're not going to tell them. You must know what it'll mean to those people in there. Is it not worth a little silence to save them suffering?
I must tell the truth.
But no one has asked you. I have heard there was much rejoicing in heaven for the lost lamb that returned to the fold. Silence can win you a lost lamb, Master Hanny.
That's a fundamentalist theory.
I do not care what it is. I'm only asking you not to add to the burden of those poor people. You who profess to love them.
Do they think that I would tell? These people are not guilty under the law, not answerable for what they do. Why should I add to their burdens?
I should never have thought that of thee. I should have known that thy hand would not add to the weight that they must bear. Thee has too much heart for that.
Are we lovers that you thee and thou me?
They smile and clasp hands. Reforms were begun in 1773. A new hospital was erected shortly afterward. And since that time, Bedlam, once a byword for terror and mistreatment, has led the way to enlightened and sensible treatment of the mentally ill. The End. Description created by NCI Described Media. This is Carl Neubauer.